Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for April the 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2018. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide, and absolutely we're convinced the checks and balances are brilliant. One of the great solutions, one of the great keys to restoration that we have. By the way, did we tell you we reject revolution? It's bloody and messy and doesn't turn out very well and not necessary. A peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth is our quest. We can use pure application of the principles that made America great, and we can do it again because the founding fathers sacrificed and created the framework to make it all possible. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're doing absolutely fantastic. A quick recap of Saturday's broadcast. By the way, did you know we're on the air live 6 days a week? We talked about the CIA is trying to ensure that its deputy director, Gina Haspel, she's a career spy, and they want to make sure that she's confirmed as the CIA's next director. The problem is almost every detail of her life and her work is classified. The only thing we really know about her is she's known for torture. Wow, what a disgrace. The problem with it all is this. They're trying to make Mike Pompeo, they want to have his confirmation in the Senate. They're going to do that today. They say the committee's going to vote no, probably, but that somehow the whole Senate's going to vote yes. I don't get that. What's the value of a committee if you don't, if you just ignore it's whatever. Might as well just go to the full Senate in the first place, right? They say all the Democrats are going to vote against Mike Pompeo. All the Republicans save Rand Paul are going to vote to affirm Mike Pompeo. Kurt Crosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
Our guest, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, on the radio with us as well. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. It's good to be with you.
All right, so they're talking about trying to seat Gina Haspel as confirmed as the next CIA director. I'm against it. We don't know much about her life. Everything is classified, except for we know she backed torture. That's a concern to me. But also Mike Pompeo's vote is supposed to be today, Lowell. And I guess all the Republicans are voting for. The Democrats are voting against. But Rand Paul is voting against. I support Rand Paul in that. So quick question for you. I would vote no on Mike Pompeo's confirmation in the Senate. What about you, Lowell?
I would as well, Sam. We've spoken out against him in previous shows a couple weeks ago, and given the reasons for that, I know in Haspel's case it was because she's okay with torture, and then not only is she okay with torture, but then she destroyed evidence of that torture in the light of investigation. And then, of course, Pompeo, in that same boat, he's willing to torture people, and that's simply inhumane, Sam. And despite the people who say that you get information from tortured victims, you get any information they will get. I mean, you get all manner of diverse information. They will tell you anything just to stop the pain, just to stop the torture. Therefore, none of the information you get from torture victim is reliable, and this has been confirmed not only by...
But the reliability is serious, no question, but it's secondary. We lose the moral high ground when we treat people like that. They hear how evil the United States is and the capitalist system is, and then they experience it firsthand. We just reinforce that reality, and the stories become more poignant, more true, more facts-based. What we need to do is treat them with kindness and dignity, and then pretty soon they're going, wait a minute, this isn't at all what I was told. Man, I really appreciate my country never treated me so good, and pretty soon we make friends and allies, and the art of negotiation and the friendship of the moral high ground. Now, I'm not saying that your point doesn't matter. I'm just saying that's the real key, right?
Absolutely. Just like the fellow who came to do jihad, economic jihad in America, he settled in the Bible Belt area of the United States, encountered a terrible car crash and was nursed back to health by Christian doctors and nurses and practitioners, therapists and so forth. And when he came to understand that Americans were not the terrible, evil, maniacal, you know, sinister guys that he grew up believing them to be and was told that they were, it changed his heart. And then he
now, just imagine if we would have tortured that guy, what would have happened?
Yeah, then it would have reinforced his perception of us. And so you're exactly right, Sam. The moral high ground, we've lost that because we have condoned torture, and now we've done it for at least two decades. And but we need to regain that. We need to spread the word. We need to insist to our public servants that we not condone torture. And that that's why these two individuals should not be confirmed to their...
Now, sadly, there's a lot of Christian organizations that are really backing Mike Pompeo or Pompeo, whatever, and attacking Rand Paul and us for... You know, they say that, hey, Pompeo's going to lose and it's going to be our fault and this kind of stuff. Again, I don't like the rhetoric on either side. I just simply want to hold the moral high ground when it comes to the world and how we treat people. And I want to make sure we don't extract false information. And part of the problem with this lady here is that most of her whole life is classified. We can't even get to the bottom of who the heck she is, except for with the little bit we do have is negative indeed. So time will tell, but they say that Pompeo's going to be... confirmed by the whole Senate, which I don't understand because they say that it'll be rejected by the committee. How does that work? What's the committee for if we're just going to override the committee with a full vote anyway?
Well, most of those committee, most of the rules in the chambers like that allow the chamber to discharge any bill or resolution or action or whatever from a committee by a majority vote of the chamber. So this, if the committee actually votes no on him, the whole chamber conceivably could get the issue out of committee and take it up.
Yeah, so here's how it is. If it's something that the bureaucrats don't want, the committee holds it up and it never comes out of committee. If it's something they do want, it doesn't matter what the committee votes, they just override the committee and shut it down, making an absolute mockery of the whole system.
Yeah, certainly not ideal. Now, I mentioned before I have a good friend who worked with the NSA. In fact, he was one of the... I don't know how high up, but one of the chiefs of a division or something in the NSA. He, his division of the NSA never tortured. He would not allow his people to torture people. And he told me that their division acquired more credible, reliable evidence than all the rest of the agencies armed put together, simply because they befriended the people that they worked with. And so there's demonstrable evidence that torture does not give you reliable information. There's demonstrable evidence that treating them humanely and kindly garners much more credible and reliable information. Plus, you maintain the moral high ground, as you said, Sam.
And just because we're kind, don't mistake our kindness for weakness. We will be very rewarding for candid, appropriate behavior, and we will be very rigorous against violating laws and abusing people. And so, but let's just make sure we don't, you know, trade our kindness for weakness. And that's an important piece to understand too. There is a way to be humane and decent, but yet to be create accountability and expectations that are very high, that are very rigorous, that are very valuable. Anyway, we can go on about this forever. Let's skip it. But I'm telling you, Mike Pompeo's votes today, and I pray he is not, but predict he will be confirmed in the Senate. So there you have that. Moving right along, Utah Republican Party 2018 nominating convention. Talking about trying to make a mockery out of the system, huh, Lowell?
That was a long day, Sam, but a very interesting day. One with lots of ups and lots of downs, a lot of frustrations.
So this was last Saturday, right?
Yeah, just 2 days ago, yep.
Okay.
Started, you know, House District and Senate District caucuses began at 8 o'clock in the morning. The main convention commenced at 11 o'clock in the morning. We had the ceremonial opening and so forth. In fact, Senator Orrin Hatch, who last year announced his retirement from the Senate, was honored there at the convention. As he came out onto the stage, there was a couple of these confetti cannons that just blasted miniature U.S. flags into the air of the Maverick Center there in West Valley City, Utah. Celebrating
old Hatch 42. Thinks he's a maverick, doesn't he?
celebrating his 42 years of service in the Senate. Now, it's very
interesting. I don't celebrate career politicians at any time. I believe the founders did not intend for career politicians to happen. I think they intended for people to get in, do what they thought they could do to make the change, and then move on. I don't celebrate career politicians. I don't care who they are.
Well, Sam, I was celebrating his retirement. I don't know about you.
But... Okay, I'm for that.
You know, the funny thing, Sam, it came kind of a shock to us. Most of the delegates, and there's 4,000 delegates there in the Maverick Center Saturday, actually 36-something, 36-27, I think, was attendance at the peak at the high water mark. So roughly 91% of the delegates attended. Anyway, most of the delegates there were seated, of course, in the stadium, in a stadium-like seating. So they were not on the floor. Delegates were not seated on the floor, you know, on the hockey rink itself, but up in the stadium, you know, the seats, the splendid seats. So we did not know up in the seats what they were shooting out. We just thought it was normal confetti. And then some of us got down to address the convention, and the microphones were there on the floor. We discovered, Sam, that these pieces of confetti were actually U.S. flags. I mean, they were like, you know, maybe 2 inches long.
I thought the U.S. flag's not supposed to touch the ground, sir.
Well, that's what I thought, Sam. I thought it was a distinctive, just a terrible...
Especially from the guy that wants to stop people from burning the flag, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, RonPaulInstitute.org. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live update for the Utah Convention last Saturday in seconds.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, they mock the flag as they honor a king. Thank heavens for Lowell Nelson and others who look at it as we're honoring the retirement of Orrin Hatch. It's kind of a good sign. I don't like this idea that people have this special status in society, Lowell, and that's kind of the biggest problem I have with it. I get that we honor one's service. I get those things. But in this case, I just don't find it genuine. I find it, he really controlled the Senate for 40 years. I don't find that an act of service as much as it is a kind of a kingdom, kind of a kingmaker. I've got a real problem with that whole scenario. And then to celebrate it by mocking with these little flags hitting the ground, I don't know. Very strange from the guy that wanted to protect the flag from everybody, right?
Yeah. you know, in fairness to him, I don't think he designed the confetti that was blown into the air there at the Maverick Center. But I criticized the party, well, the convention planners. I don't even know how many in party leadership knew what was going to be coming out of those confetti cannons. But I just was a bit shocked and dismayed by the fact that we had these all, you know, thousands and thousands of these miniature confetti flags.
Yeah, but who even supports confetti cannons in the first place? I mean, let's just get down to business. We're here for a convention. Let's get it done.
Yeah, there's always, I don't know, half hour to an hour of ceremonial stuff that goes on. You know, you've got the presentation of the colors, the national anthem. You've got dignitaries that come and speak. They march on, and we treat them like, you know, royalty. And you know, I for the first time delegate, I think it's pretty interesting. I think most people like to, you know, it is healthy. On one hand, it's healthy to hear from elected officials for them to give an accounting of their service, you know, as a public servant. But on the other hand, once you've been around them as long as I have, you realize that all they're saying is rhetoric. They're basically demagoguing the body. They're using rhetoric to make themselves look good. They aren't really saying anything of substance, you know. So it really is a waste of time. And you're right. We really should use that time instead to get down to business. But on the other hand, it does bring them to the conventions, and they have to meet and greet people. And sometimes, you know, that's healthy because the key delegates are very much in the habit of holding these public servants accountable for the decisions they make and the things they say.
All right, so the news coming out of the convention, what's the highlights? Because it was a long day, right?
Biggest news, Sam, this didn't come till very late in the day. You know, we didn't have the first vote until about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll get to that. But first, the biggest news of the day was that the candidate Mitt Romney failed to win a majority of support from the delegates, Sam. That was pretty major, not only did the Salt Lake Tribune post that story, but it was referenced on the Drudge Report over the weekend, Sam. Mitt Romney fails to win at the Utah State Republican Party convention. Turns out that the doctor, a doctor in the tradition of Dr. Ron Paul, Dr. Mike Kennedy, who is both an attorney and a doctor, practicing doctor, won 51% of the vote on the second and final ballot, Sam. And afterwards, let me just tell you a little bit more about him. Mike Kennedy served in the Utah State Legislature for 6 years, as he was my rep, my state representative, and yours too, I believe. Did an admirable job while he was there. He has a lifetime ranking of 12th on the Utah Grassroots Liberty Index scorecard. That's not too shabby out of 75 representatives to be 12th out of 75. I mean, that's pretty admirable, really. And he's a great guy, great family. I know them well. I visit with them all the time. I mean, they live up the road here in Alpine. Just a great, great family. And so after the convention, when the media were interviewing Dr. Kennedy, they asked him how he hoped to win the primary. Well, he answered that he would do it. He would be able to do that with just good hard work, you know, one-on-one, one voter at a time. I mean, obviously, the media is asking him, well, how are you going to compete with the millions of dollars that Romney is bringing to the table? And he's saying, look, we won the convention by just good hard work. We'll win the primary the very same way. Now, he is not naive. He's very much aware that the only way he can win is if delegates spread the word about him, and he won't be able to compete monetarily with Mitt Romney's $1 million. But you know, by the way, Kennedy only spent about $30,000, whereas Romney spent $500,000 on this convention race.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've always said that it takes money, and it does, but it takes a combination of money and foot soldiers and media. And this is an example where we don't have to have as much as the other guy. And I've never claimed we do. But what I do claim is we need solid backing for our candidates in those three ways: media, money, and foot soldiers. And believe it or not, he has enough of enough to get it done. And this just proves the point. We don't have to have what the other guys have. Incredible example, isn't it?
Absolutely, Sam. You know, he used the David and Goliath example, but not in the way that you might think. In fact, Mitt Romney, who spoke first at the convention, used the David and Goliath example, and he said that, let's see, what did he say? He said, I'm the, so he says, but I'm the David, and the Goliath is Washington, D.C. So that was basically, he's saying, you know, send me back to Washington, D.C. so I can slay this Goliath of a state back in Washington, D.C. Well, then when Mike Kennedy spoke, he talked about David and Goliath as well, but not in the way that you might have thought. I mean, everybody thought that he would have likened himself to David and Mitt Romney being Goliath, but not so. It turns out that Mike Kennedy likened himself to the stone and the people of Utah as the David, and of course Washington D.C. as Goliath, and he says, "Let me be that stone that you cast back into Washington D.C. to slay Goliath." So very, very interesting.
A much better poignant analogy, and it literally tipped Romney off his game. And I believe that kind of reality check, in other words, that kind of connecting with the people of Kennedy, really made the difference here, I think.
I believe you're right, Sam. I believe you're right. Kennedy was very appreciative of his team, you know, his campaign team, of all the volunteers, the citizens, friends, legislators, everybody who helped him, you know, win a convention. Kennedy is such a humble, appreciative guy. I mean, he's a salt of the earth type of individual. So it's going to be an interesting primary. The primary is the fourth week in June. So
and let's be very clear with the caucus system. If it was the only thing in place, let's just understand this. Romney would be done, wouldn't he?
No, it takes 60%.
No, but here's the point. He wouldn't even have got on the ballot like he did, right?
Well, let's see. The caucus convention system always produces at least two people for the primary unless one of the candidates at convention gets 60% of the support of the delegate.
All right, so Mike only got 51%, so he still would have been there. It's the interesting way, though, is how Romney did get on the ballot, though, I guess.
Yes, Romney got on the ballot in two ways. One, by gathering signatures, and number two, by obtaining at least 40% at the convention. So, there would have been a primary in this case. And that's often the case, by the way, in federal races here in the Republican Party. Any time you get a big congressional race or a big Senate race, even the state statewide races such as governor, attorney general, and so forth, if you have good viable challengers, the delegates generally send the two best, top best, you know, the most vote-getting people, candidates, to the primary. And so we often have primaries in these larger races. That's pretty common.
Our prayers are with Mike Kennedy on that one as well. The other piece of good news is Chris Herod lives another day, huh?
That's right, Sam. He got into the primary with about 41% of the vote. John Curtis got 59%, and so just shy, just less than a percentage point shy of winning the nomination outright. And so that's what Chris wanted. Chris wanted to get into another primary with Curtis. As you may recall, Sam, the special primary last year featured three candidates, Chris Herod, John Curtis, and a gentleman named Tanner Ainge, Danny Ainge's boy. And in that primary, Curtis got 43% of the vote, Herod 33% of the vote. So it's 43-33, and then Ainge got 24% of the vote. And so Curtis was a plurality winner, Sam. He did not have a majority support. The difference in this case, this primary, this time, this June, only two people will be in the primary. We'll see whether Chris Herod can best John Curtis.
Well, and again, we can't win the money game, but we can put money in. We can't win the delegate game, but we can be involved. And we can't win the media game, but we can make a difference. Will it be enough? We decide, folks.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
He Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
When a beer commercial, everyone's happy and they're jumping around or whatever.
The thing is they not only have appealing activities, they have appealing people out there too. You know, you see beer commercials and it's done with natural water and it's cold brewed or heat pasteurized and all that kind of stuff. They make it sound more like a health food almost, but they never show the hangovers or alcoholism or anything like that.
And then in reality, you're happy and then you're vomiting in the bathroom and then you're waking up sick the next morning with a really bad headache.
Any person that says that beer is merely for recreational use is stupid because it's a form of alcohol.
They just want your money. It's the people that sell the product that are getting the most out of it, not the people that use it.
That's exactly what they're doing there. I'll sell our beer and it doesn't matter what it takes, just sell it.
No, they're not honest messages. They don't show the flip side of it, the results of alcohol.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, back with you live. We're talking about the Utah caucus system. We're talking about the events that took place in Utah last Saturday with our buddy Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, ronpaulinstitute.org, and Utah Republican Party 2018 nominating convention. Romney forced into a primary for the Utah Senate nomination. Let's talk about why the caucus system works and the benefits of the caucus system. Without it, where would we be? It might just be a coronation of Romney, huh, Lowell?
Probably so, because without the caucus system, the popular alternative that's employed in most other states is just a direct primary, direct election, where all voters who want to affiliate with the Republican Party, in this case, for example, would just go and vote, and their vote would be based more on whatever media exposure the various candidates were able to...
Yeah, which would mean, for the most part, Kennedy wouldn't have a chance.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And I don't know if you have that, if you've seen that 95-second
video. I have the audio ready to play when you're ready for it, but really quick before we get to it, I just want to say this reminds me of the 17th Amendment all over again. They literally took the senators from voting for and putting a senator in place on the federal level or the national level, so the state's legislative body would put the senators up, and so there'd be a check and balance. You had the states represented with a seat at the table. Well, the 17th Amendment took that away, and they're kind of doing the same thing here to say, let's just get the delegates out of it, go straight to the people with the media backing them, and they've taken the delegates or the check and balance out of the way. These two are very similar. In my opinion, the rejecting of the appropriate checks and balances that give all these different positions a seat at the table. That's the genius of America they're dismantling, in my view.
Yeah, that's a great point. The delegates provide, they're more analogous to the Senate before the 17th Amendment was passed, just like you say, Sam, because the delegates are the people who study the record of the public servants, and they have a much better, they have a longer view. They're not blowing in the wind, so to speak, with every wind of doctrine that comes along. So, you know, a direct election voter typically will make a decision based on just that year, maybe that week of information that he gets from the media, whereas a delegate is more devoted. They spend more time. They study the record, the voting record of the various people. They study what they say. They question them on hard, meaningful questions.
And it's a much more personal setting. It doesn't have the media as kind of a mitigator or whatever you want to say. It's direct interaction, right?
That's right. And because of that, they have a much better view, I think, of how the public servant has performed in public office or how a candidate, potential public servant, will perform. They're able to provide a greater amount of stability to the electoral system. Whereas, you know, the direct election, even the caucus system here in Utah, we call it the caucus convention primary system because it involves all three elements, particularly in the case when delegates cannot, by a 60% margin, they cannot decide who the best candidate is. Then they turn it over to the popular election, direct election.
Well, with the checks and balances, it's a republic. Without it, we turn ourselves more into a democracy every day. Explain the soundbite, then we'll play it, Lowell.
Right. Thank you, Sam. So Ken Cromar and I put together this 95-second animated cartoon, and we've tried to distill the essence of the value of the caucus convention primary system of Utah into this 95-second video, which we produced for the delegates at this convention last week, and we're thinking now we'd like to take it nationwide. We'll maybe change the soundtrack and make it generally applicable, so that individuals in states throughout the union who are now suffering under direct election of their party nominees, they in hopes that they could change their systems back to a caucus system, which is what most states had to begin with, by the way, Sam. For the first 50-100 years, most states did have a caucus convention system, not the direct system of direct election.
Right, here's the soundbite, then we'll talk about it. Incredible video. Here we go.
Saturday at convention, we will have the opportunity to elect legislators who will help restore the caucus convention primary system in Utah. Let's review the importance of this system. The founders of our republic understood how to keep elected officials accountable. They knew that candidates for public office would require careful examination by trustworthy individuals. There's a great value in finding candidates who understand the proper role of limited government and who are most likely to demonstrate public virtue in office. Politicians with money can overwhelm us with advertising, so we don't even notice the people with principles and character who could really improve the quality of government. It should never just be about the popularity that money can buy. The caucus convention primary system allows us to select a few trustworthy delegates from our neighborhoods to carefully evaluate all the candidates personally, to get past the calculated soundbites and slick brochures, and hear actual ideas, examine candidate records, and individually ask meaningful questions. We need to restore the caucus convention primary system so the general public has access to candidates with carefully examined philosophies, not just candidates with lots of cash. Saturday at the State Party Nominating Convention, your vote can help strengthen the caucus convention primary system in Utah. Vote only for candidates who have proven their clear support for the caucus convention primary system. Thank you.
There you have it, Lowell. That's our quest.
Awesome. Thank you for playing that. You know, the highlights of that for me, Sam, is the notion of accountability, where and examination. You know, where people can closely examined various candidates, their ideology, their philosophy, how they are going to govern, how they make their decisions. It's an examination of private virtue because, as you know, the founders spoke highly of private virtue, believing that that would extend over into public virtue while serving in office. So I find that the examination being a very key part of our caucus system. Also, the point was made about slick commercial, radio commercials, TV commercials, brochures, all of the things that big money can buy, easily buy. You get past that. Delegates of the caucus convention system, they're not swayed by the slick, glossy ads and so forth on TV, radio, and in print, but instead they go right to the source. And like you said, in intimate settings, group settings, small group settings, and so forth, they are able to examine closely the candidates. And then because they are able to do that, they provide, you know, if there's not like at least 60% support for any one candidate at the convention, then they push the two top candidates to the public, to the general voters affiliated with that party. The caucus convention system is adopted not only by the Republican Party in the state of Utah, but by the Democrat Party and by the Constitution Party. So it's a real popular system, and it does get to the ballot, the primary ballot, the very best candidates, hand-selected by the delegates, so that when the the primary election voters approach that ballot, they have two excellent candidates that have been thoroughly vetted by the delegates and put up for the primary election, and either one is going to be really good. And so we find ourselves voting not for the lesser of two evils, but for the better of two goods. And it's a really encouraging, wonderful way that the convention system produces candidates who make meaningful change, who understand the proper role of government, and they serve us well in office, Sam.
All right, there you have it. You know, it's hard to know how much more to focus on this. This caucus system is critical, in my opinion. We need to repeal the 17th Amendment in like-minded restoration of a republic and rejection of a democracy-style government. We need to use the checks and balances that our founding fathers found so intriguing and valuable in their grand old experiment that I find so vital to the success of a true republic with limited government. Using the checks and balances is the way to ensure a limited proper role of government. This is a critical point to understand, and Utah is kind of a test bed, in my mind, to either hold the line. It's kind of a crossroads, so to speak, to either hold the line or to melt down and you know, hey, we turn more into a democracy style government. Any final thoughts before we move on, Lowell?
Well, I agree with you. We could spend 2 or 3 hours on this, but we don't have that kind of time. I just mentioned then to close out this segment, Sam, that there's a group called Keep My Voice, and they produced a 16-page colored brochure, a beautiful brochure, but it had a lot of substance inside of the brochure describing how the caucus system works, the benefits of the caucus system, Utah's election history. Very, very good stuff. I mean, meaningful stuff. And this is the kind of information that we'd like to get out nationwide so that people of all states and of all political parties and persuasions can benefit from the caucus system. Its origin was right there in Boston, Massachusetts. John Adams.
All right, we're out of time this segment. IRS discussions next segment. Sorry to cut you off, Lowell. It's a hard break. Thank you. Back in seconds.
Yep.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Ladies and gentlemen, we really need to get Lowell Nelson to join us for 2 hours every Monday instead of an hour because the topics he brings up are so valuable, so poignant, that they're hard to just distill into these smaller chunks or sound bites, if you will. The topics are incredible. The caucus system is vital to preserve. We could talk about it for quite a while and still be spot on and not enough information as it is. Nevertheless, the caucus system is valuable. We've articulated that, and we highlight and encourage everyone to please get involved to preserve it, not only in Utah, but across the nation. Now we want to talk about freedom and income taxation are opposites. Jacob G. Hornberger writes the article, incredible article, which we'll get into in just a second, but I want to say this. Everybody filed their income taxes last week. Those who didn't might live in fear from their government. When you're in fear of your government, you live in tyranny. When the government's afraid of the people, we live in liberty. What do we have in America today? That's the question that I would ask. Really, this is an epic battle to understand about income tax, what it does to a society, Lowell.
thank you, Sam. That's right. Jacob begins his article in this manner. He says it's important that we remind ourselves of an important point. Income taxation and the Internal Revenue Service are irreconcilable with the principles of a free society. Another way to put this is, he says, if you're living in a society in which the government wields the power to seize the fruits of your earnings, then you're not living in a free society, no matter how convinced you are of it. You know, that's Sam, end of quote there. Sam, that's one of the things that bugs me is that people, well, I mean, bugs is maybe not the right word. It concerns me is that most people here in America don't think they live in a tyrannical society. They think they're free. And maybe we are the most free nation on the earth. I don't know. But we live in, now look at the list of things that we didn't have 100 years ago or 150 years ago. And Hornberger mentions a bunch of these things in his article. He says we lived without the welfare state and the warfare state, talking about like for over a century, like from 1792 on until like the early 20th century, 1913 notably, no Social Security, no Medicare, no Medicaid, no farm subsidies, no food stamps, no public housing, no drug laws, no immigration controls, no public schooling, no Pentagon, no military-industrial complex, no CIA, no NSA, no FBI, no EPA, no DEA, no SEC, no Department of Homeland Security, no ICE, nor most of the other myriad agencies of the welfare warfare state. Sam, most of those came along in the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years.
And we got to ask, how much better is society with them all?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the growth, the productive capacity, the dynamism of our economic engine from 1790s to through the 1900s, 1910, 1920. It was incredible. I think 1913 was a bad year for a number of reasons, but certainly it was in the 1900s from basically the last 100 years when America took a dive, and we have been suffering ever since, right? I mean, but you think of the way we lived the first 100 years here in the United States. The way of life that we followed defined us as Americans. We were the most unusual society in history, but we gave it all up. And for what? We gave it up for socialism, for interventionism, and for imperialism. And then Hornberger begins to describe here in his article, begins to describe the small decisions that have resulted in a huge change of direction this country has taken. He says this, Sam. He says, they, speaking of us as Americans, he's talking about us, ourselves, they embraced and adopted the variation of socialism known as the welfare state. They embraced and adopted the totalitarian structure known as the national security state. They embraced and adopted drug laws, which are the hallmark of tyrannical regimes. That came along, by the way, in the 1930s, Sam. After Prohibition, you know, was such a failure, then because that was repealed, they said we got to have something else to be our boogeyman so we can beat up on, and then they chose drugs. Back to the Hornberger article, they embraced and adopted the regulated, controlled, and managed economy, right? That we, parenthetically here again, we moved away from laissez-faire, from free market capitalism, into the region of sort of the public-private partnerships, the fascist tint to our economy. I mean, basically a managed, controlled economy. Getting back to Hornberger now, he says they embraced foreign wars, foreign interventionism, partnerships with dictators, coups, assassinations, torture, and other practices long employed by dictatorial regimes. And, of course, they embraced and adopted the means by which all of this statism is funded, income taxation, and also, to a large extent, the Federal Reserve System, which fraudulently taxes people's income and wealth through inflation. Now Hornberger's list could have been even more lengthy, but I believe he painted the picture very clearly and with a sufficient number of examples. And today he writes, quote, many Americans are coming to the realization of what has happened to our country with respect to foreign wars, empire, and foreign interventions. They're growing sick and tired of perpetual war. They're starting to figure out that empire, interventionism, and militarism were no part of the founding principles of our nation. They are seeing what empire and foreign interventionism are doing to our rights, our freedoms, and economic well-being here at home. They're beginning to think. They're beginning to question. And the same holds true in the drug war. More and more Americans are waking up and seeing the horrible destructiveness and immorality of this government program. End of quote. And so he's saying that, you know, people are waking up to certain aspects of our empire and of our tyrannical state. And so when just at the moment you become hopeful that this story is about to have a happy ending, he drops the hammer on us, Sam. He says, quote, unfortunately, however, all too many Americans have not yet come to the same realization with respect to the welfare state, the managed economy, the Federal Reserve, and, of course, the income tax and the IRS. The fact is, you have the natural, God-given right to keep everything you earn. You also have the natural, God-given right to decide what to do with your own money. Your money belongs to you, not the government. To achieve a genuinely free society, the income tax needs to be cast into the dustbin of history along with the immoral and destructive welfare warfare state apparatuses that it funds. End of quote.
Boy, howdy, and that's why I've been kind of critical of the Republicans and Donald Trump, saying, hey, guys, I appreciate the income tax break that you gave us. It's small, but, hey, it's better than nothing, as Rand Paul said. We'll support it and hope for more. But really, until Donald and the Republicans are going to start talking about abolishing the abusive, hostile IRS, the unconstitutional agency that really breeds terror across the nation, until we really talk about rejecting that, and until we really dig into the money system, hey, without honest money, with an IRS in place, you can't make much progress. It's window dressing. It feels good. It's better than nothing, but it isn't a real solution. Because they'll just give you a carrot today and take it away tomorrow. They'll take two carrots away tomorrow. And day in and day out, Americans have a short memory. They won't remember. And And so we've really got to kind of hammer on what the real solutions are. And it's the absolute shutdown of the IRS and a shutdown of the dishonest Federal Reserve. Until we get those things done, there will not be a direct sea change in what's going on. There'll just be a little bit of tinkering here and there. It'll feel good for a day. It'll feel bad for 2 days. It'll feel good for a day. And it'll just be this thing that they kind of play the Americans like a fiddle. They deceive us, and it's almost like a fool's gold answer.
Well, that's right, Sam. Jason Stapleton added another perspective to the conversation that I really like. We haven't mentioned that here on the show, and so I'll do so right now. He said that this this tax bill, you know, the big tax bill that everybody's so happy about that the, you know, Republicans and Trump finally got through. He calls that a wealth transfer, a transfer of wealth, because what it's doing, they gave us tax cut, but they didn't cut spending. And so the bottom line of that is that really we are now going to have a little bit more money of our own money to spend because it's not being taxed away from us. But our children and our grandchildren are going to have to pay for it. So it's a wealth transfer.
And he's exactly right on that fact. The only negative about that is that, look, one choice to keep more money in the hands of the people is good. We need to push harder, as Rand Paul said, though, and reduce the spending. So I get his point. His point's right on and valid. But we got to be careful to make sure we applaud the good that's done and then push for the next good that needs to be done. And if you're not careful and you take his point too far, you say, well, we shouldn't have even done the good we did. You got to be very careful to put it in a light that's usable and positive, even though his point is correct.
Right on. And a number of the Senate candidates at Saturday's convention and during their campaigns, they hit really hard on this point that we need to reduce spending. Now, when Washington, D.C. talks about reducing spending, all they really mean is that they want to reduce the increases in spending. And so this year, if they spend $100, next year they spend $110, they will call you at that maybe a reduction of 10% because they had planned to spend $120 next year, but instead they spent $110. They call that a 10% reduction in spending. And that's so disingenuous. It's a lie, Sam. And so what we really need are people back in Washington, we need a house that will say, look, we're going to spend less in real dollars. We're going to spend less next year than we did this year. That and truly would be a cut in spending. But when politicians...
In other words, $90.
Yeah, $90 instead of $100. That's what we really need. So we need to be real savvy when we listen to these politicians talk, because what they say is not what you think they are saying.
The point is this incredible article by Hornberger. Tell everybody where to get it, because this is something that ought to be go viral on the net. Incredible article, Lowell.
Wonderful, Sam. It's at the RonPaulLibertyReport.com. That's the RonPaulLibertyReport.com. And you can find great articles there, also great conversations that Ron Paul has every day. He's on Monday through Friday with about a 20-minute segment called the Ron Paul Liberty Report, and is well worth the time it takes to just listen to that every day, Sam.
All right, there you have it. I just want to also kind of mention again, I'm not here to attack anybody, but I am here to point out a clear solution. And every step we can make, and I get caught in this too, I want an all-or-nothing solution oftentimes, and Kurt has to remind me, and he's wise to do so, by the way, that Sam, just because you want an all-out solution, like Hornberger does in this case, or like this, Jason, or Stapleton.
Jason Stapleton.
All right, says, you know, hey, Sam, it's only a transfer of wealth. That's all true, and he's right, but we got to be like Kurt Crosby says. Let's celebrate the incremental gains we get. Let's be very careful not to ignore the good that's being done. Kurt, I know you've only got a couple of seconds, but last word is yours.
Well, all I can say is, ladies and gentlemen, thank goodness for folks like Lowell Nelson who, shows us how it ought to be done. We pray for him to be cloned all across America. Yeah.
And who said we didn't believe in cloning, huh? Amen to that. All right, thank you, Lowell. Godspeed, sir.
You're welcome, gentlemen. Thank you.
This is the Widow's Mite Radio Network. We need your finances, your support. Spread the word, libertyroundtable.com, libertynewsradio.com. For Sam, Kurt, and Lowell, we declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore America. Will you help this nation shall endure?